Welcome to Film Broad C, a podcast for women who want to learn how to write and produce a film they love. If you're a newbie writer or filmmaker, or an actress who's tired of auditions for one-dimensional roles, if you're overseeing yet another badly written script from a mediocre white man and you want to do something about it, you're in the right place. Get inspired by the pioneering women of the golden age of Hollywood through to today's changemakers and disruptors with practical how-tos to finally write and produce your damn script already. I'm your host, Emily Grace. Welcome to the show. Welcome to episode 10. Do you know how many amazing women there are in Los Angeles who want to be part of your film to direct and crew and solve problems and support you? Now, I'm talking about LA specifically because I've witnessed this in real time as the short film that I'm producing and assistant directing Shadow Work has come together. By the time you hear this episode, we will be in the can. Shadow Work production will be over. But leading up to that moment, we were able to fully cast, get an all-female and non-binary crew to get fully funded in a very short amount of time with a very high quality caliber of people on the team. So I just want to take a moment to encourage you. If you know you want to make your short film or launch your video game or whatever the project is, and you think, well, I don't have a network or know that many people, so I guess I'll just do it all by myself, or maybe I just won't do it at all. Don't you dare go down that road. There are people all around you, whether you're in LA or literally anywhere in the world, there are people who want to help you and who are willing to help you. Katie, who you might remember from episode 7, she is the screenwriter and star and producer of Shadow Work. And guess what? Katie is a first-time filmmaker. She has single-handedly pulled together a fabulous crew of key players who then pulled in more amazing people to make this film possible. You can do that too. Then we have a little update on Pigeon. This is my short film that I've written, that I will be starring in and producing, that is so very dear to my heart. The Pigeon crowdfund team is in place. I have been able to bring together an amazing group of women who want to help me raise the money for this film. I don't know if they want to. Like, yes, I can't wait to ask my team of people to give money to your film. But they're willing. This is what I'm talking about. When you feel very passionate about your screenplay, when it's something that matters to you, there are people in the world who will resonate with that story and are willing to come on board to help you make your film, even if that means raising money, something that can be very uncomfortable for people. And what's so incredible to me about the Pigeon crowdfunding team is it's women from all over the world. None of us are living in the same city, and yet we're able to come together as a team to make this film a reality. Now, don't worry, I'm going to be all over this podcast talking about Pigeon. I'm going to be asking you for financial support to donate to my crowdfund. So start putting aside some of that latte money right now so you're in a comfortable position to support this film if you resonate with it. So let's get focused here. In fact, let's get laser focused because today I want to talk about the mini outline. This is the next step in the process to write a short film you love, and it's time for you to get laser focused on your story. So what is the mini outline? It's somewhere between a logline and a synopsis. The logline is a one-sentence description of your project. It's a strong marketing tool that hooks buyers to want to know more about your project, and the logline kind of functions like an email subject. An email subject has a very specific purpose. It's to get you to open the email. Once you've done that, the email is then designed to get you to keep reading and to take a very specific call to action. That's how email marketing is designed. A logline is sort of like that email subject. If you like the logline, you'll want to know more about the film. Now, if a buyer doesn't like the logline, if they don't resonate with it, if it's not what they're looking for, they probably don't really need to know any more about that film. And sometimes I see my private clients or clients in my program get really paralyzed by the idea of the logline. It's one sentence, it has to convey so much, it's supposed to help you sell your film, and that level of pressure can sometimes lead the writer to shut down. So to help you stay in a place of action, let's just put the logline aside and focus on your mini outline. It's a three-sentence paragraph that describes your story in the simplest forms. So it's longer than a logline, shorter than a synopsis. And right now, we're not at the stage of selling your project. And if you're making a short, that probably isn't your intention in the first place. You're more likely to produce this short than to try to pitch it and sell it to somebody else. Pitching and selling should be reserved for your TV pilot or your feature film. Now, speaking of which, I want to take a quick sidebar. I'm putting together a four-week program to help you get started on a TV pilot or feature film screenplay. It's called Get Your Act Together. And if you know me, you know I'm very passionate that you start with a short film. And once you've done the short film, you're ready for the next logical step. But writing a feature film or a TV pilot is a very, very different experience from writing a short film. And I don't want you to try to figure this out by yourself. I've seen too many clients come to me after they've written their screenplay, right? 50, 60, 90 pages. They come to me for feedback and they haven't written the script with the proper tools to begin with. So it makes the process a lot more difficult and a lot harder to then kind of undo everything that's on the page and reconstruct it with the proper tools. So if a TV pilot or feature film is in your near future, get on the wait list for this program. It's called Get Your Act Together. Get on the wait list like right now. Like don't do it later, put it off and do it later. The wait list for this program is opening up this week. It's going to be open for a very limited time, and this is your chance to get early access registration and to get early bird pricing. If you're on the wait list, I'm also going to throw in a special bonus, and you're only going to know what that is if you're on the wait list. So if you know you want to learn how to write a TV pilot or a feature film and you want to do it with help, with my help specifically, make sure that you're on the wait list for Get Your Act Together. And the way to get on the wait list is you can DM me at TheOnlyEmilyGrace or go to writeyourshort.com. There's a link you can click to get on the wait list. Just do it right now because the wait list is about to open and I don't want you to miss out on that early bird pricing because it's going to be a really great deal. All right, let's come back to the point of your mini outline. Okay, the point of your mini outline is not to sell your project. It is to help you make decisions about your story. Each step that you're taking in season one of this podcast is helping you get closer to writing a powerful, well thought out script. And this is the next part of your foundation. So what goes into your mini outline? I'm so glad you asked because I'm going to tell you right now. It's going to introduce us to your protagonist, what they want, what's in the way, what's at stake, and have an emotional hook. And in some cases, it might even give away the end of your story. Now, the way that I use the mini outline with my clients is this is an internal exercise. We're not going to be sharing this outside of the program. So in this case, it's okay to give away your ending. I would not recommend that you do that in your logline, but we're talking about the mini outline, which is a very different tool with a different purpose. Now, in a little bit, I'll talk you through some good and bad examples of a mini outline, and I'm going to have some fun with this. But first, let's talk about silent film star Mabel Normand. This show is sponsored by Write Your Short. If you want to write and produce a script that you love, but you don't know how to get started, go to writeyourshort.com. Don't create in a vacuum or try to figure this out all by yourself. Learn how to write a festival-worthy script you can produce or star in or direct or wear all those hats at once. With writeyourshort.com, you can get the exact next steps you need to take based on where you're at in the process. No guesswork, self-doubt, or overwhelm. Just a proven process to make the most powerful film possible. That's writeyourshort.com. And now, back to the show. I mentioned Mabel Normand briefly in a previous episode. She mentored Charlie Chaplin, and some say she taught him everything he knew about physical comedy. And yet his name is the one that's remembered, and hers is highly overlooked. If we were to write a mini outline about her life, it might go something like this. A lovable actress and comedian decides to expand her success by directing her own films. But when her co-collaborators take credit for her work and tarnish her public image, she must become ruthless in her personal and professional life or risk losing her career altogether. We've got our protagonist, what she wants, what's at stake, what's in the way, and an emotional hook. So who was Mabel Normand? She, like many women who've been featured on this podcast, was also a friend of Mary Pickford. Now, for a time, she rivaled Mary Pickford as America's sweetheart. Mabel's career started as a model who went on to become an actor, comedian, screenwriter, and director during the silent film era. She starred in upwards of 167 short films and 23 feature-length films. She was one of the earliest silent film actors to direct her own work. Unfortunately, the impact of her work has largely been overshadowed by multiple scandals, often ones she had nothing to do with personally, and also male co-stars and executives who took credit for her work. Early in her career, she collaborated with Mack Sennett at Biograph, where Mary Pickford also got her start on film, and he later encouraged her to move to LA from New York to join his Keystone Film Company, where Mabel starred in several films. She often played the typical female tropes depicted in film at the time, the object of desire, the ingenue, the damsel in distress tied to the railway tracks, but she was a really strong comedian, and at Keystone, she created a new kind of character, the pretty girl who could take a pratfall. It doesn't sound revolutionary now, but up until that time, comedic actors really played up a comedic look with crossed eyes and leaning into unusual features. A pretty girl who was also funny was very revolutionary at this time. Mabel became known for her mastery of the art of slapstick comedy, a very early precursor to Lucille Ball. She's even said to have originated the pie-in-the-face gag on film. Supposedly, Mabel wanted to try to make her very serious co-star Ben Turpin laugh, so she threw a custard pie in his face, and Mack Sennett, seeing this happen on a lunch break — this wasn't like in a script, they weren't filming, this was just lunch — Mack Sennett incorporated that pie throwing into a film scene that featured Mabel, and he went on to feature this gag in a lot of films at the time. The studio ended up buying so many pies from a nearby grocery store that the owner began to specialize in custard pies. They didn't splatter too much when they landed, and when they fell, the pie stayed on the actor's face, which really sold the comedic beat to the audience. Another actor who worked steadily at Keystone at the time was a young Charlie Chaplin. Many accounts suggest that Charlie Chaplin really floundered in his early career, and it was Mabel who advocated for and mentored him to find his slapstick comedic voice. Now, in his memoir, Chaplin gives Norman little credit, and he also attributes a lot of her influence on the genre to being his own influence, so take that as you will. By 1912, Mabel had begun to identify herself as a director more than as an actor, and she made a deal with Keystone to direct every film that she acted in from then on out. She also wrote many of her own films at the time, like a classic multi-hyphenate. We don't know how many films she actually wrote and directed because credit was often shared or just straight up given to Sennett or Chaplin or another frequent co-star of Mabel's who was Fatty Arbuckle. So Mabel herself was credited on 7 films, but the number could be more than 4 times that credit in terms of her screenwriting credit. She's a really prime example of a wildly talented and busy woman who was never given her due. In 1918, she formed the Mabel Norman Feature Film Company with Max Sennett's help and was one of the first leading actors to have their own production company. Honestly, I wish she had partnered with Mary Pickford instead of Mary Pickford partnering with Charlie Chaplin, who apparently Mary Pickford was very frustrated because Chaplin didn't really do anything for the day-to-day operations to keep United Artists running. That really came down to Mary Pickford's efforts. Mabel and Mary probably would have made such a better collaboration and partnership. Mabel produced a feature film called Mickey, which was a big success, but sadly, it was the only film ever produced by the Mabel Norman Film Company, in part because of a rift that formed between Mabel and Max Sennett. He decided to delay the release of the film, which she disagreed with at the time, and it was also due to the fact that they had a very messy on-again, off-again romantic relationship. Now, here's where it gets really, really messy. It was around this time that Fatty Arbuckle, a frequent co-star of Mabel's, so co-star as in like these two are headlining the film, they were always thought of as a duo. You couldn't think about one with thinking about the other. So that's important to understand. Because around this time, Fatty Arbuckle was accused of multiple sexual assault allegations and ended up going to trial, which was huge scandal at the time. And because of her association with him, Mabel's image was automatically tarnished. Now, after that, scandal just seemed to follow her around. A very close friend of hers, William Desmond Taylor, who was the president of the Motion Pictures Directors Association, was murdered in 1922, and that case was never solved. There's a fantastic book about it if you want to learn more about this subject. It's called Tinseltown, Murder, Morphine, and Madness at the Dawn of Hollywood by author William J. Mann. This book is fascinating. It really delves into this time period and deep into the mystery of this still to this day unsolved murder. And the book also talks about this perfect storm of Hollywood scandals that led to the implementation of the Hays Code, which I talked about a little bit back in episode 6. So Fatty Arbuckle's indictment paired with the horrible death of Olive Thomas. She was an up-and-coming young actress who was married to Jack Pickford, who's Mary Pickford's little brother. Olive Thomas drank mercury bichloride, which is incredibly toxic and a horrible, painful way to die. Some say it was an accident after a long night of partying and drugs, and she didn't know what she reached for or what she was drinking. Some say it was suicide, and some have put forth that maybe it's murder. So that scandal, plus the murder of William Desmond Taylor, which the investigation uncovered that he was a closeted gay man who had abandoned a wife and child and changed his name. These three events were the perfect storm for the religious conservatives who already felt that movies were amoral and dangerous to those youngins, and they just could not turn a blind eye to all of this scandal. This put Hollywood into danger, and of course the studio executives didn't want to stop making movies. They didn't want to stop making money, but they were having a very hard time keeping their actors out of trouble. So this was a time when the studio heads actually banded together instead of being in direct competition. They came together around this idea of censorship, and they cooked up this idea of the Hays Code as a form of voluntary censorship. So it was like a list of behaviors or things that they could and couldn't do with their films that they basically told the religious right, hey, we're going to self-censor ourselves so you don't have to worry about it. That was the original intention of the Hays Code, to placate the pearl clutchers and avoid Hollywood losing any money at the box office. Now, of course, that didn't last. Eventually, the Hays Code did become officially the law of the land, and censorship became widespread throughout Hollywood. But at this time, it was still voluntary censorship. Now, Hollywood was able to keep making movies and making money, but unfortunately, Mabel's career was collateral damage because she was so closely associated with these scandalous men. In addition to her on-screen association with Arbuckle, she was the last person to see William Desmond Taylor alive, which made her a suspect at one point in the case. She was ultimately cleared, but because of her proximity to these scandals, her career just went straight into the toilet. And then it gets worse. 2 years later, her chauffeur was involved in a shooting, and Mabel herself made headlines for her drug and alcohol abuse. Now, this is the really sad part because William Desmond Taylor had been an advocate and supporter to help Mabel originally get sober. I think if I remember from the Tinseltown book, he paid for her to go to rehab and he helped her stay clean. So when he was murdered, you know, it stands to reason there was no therapy. People weren't dealing with their problems at this stage of human evolution. It stands to reason that Mabel just really spiraled back into drugs and alcohol after all of the shit she went through. Now, when her drug and alcohol abuse resurfaced as an issue, this was the point the public essentially turned its back on her and her career died. And then it gets worse again. She contracted tuberculosis in 1923, and her health declined rapidly after that, leading to her death in 1930. Because so much attention was paid to Mabel's personal life, her film work is often overlooked, but there is no question about the lasting impact she made on the comedic style of early cinema. So let's come back to the idea of the mini outline. Remember the one I made up about Mabel's life. A lovable actress and comedian decides to expand her success by directing her own films, but when her co-collaborators take credit for her work and tarnish her public image, she must become ruthless in her personal and professional life or risk losing her career altogether. Now, if this were really a movie, it's a tragedy, right? She wasn't able to maintain the success. She did end up losing her career and ultimately her life to tuberculosis. So it would be a sad, sad story. But the mini outline is on point. So now I want to make up a few mini outlines from different projects so you can start to see the tool in action. And let's have some fun with it. I want to show you a bad mini outline and then how to make it better. Because if there's one thing I see a lot in the work with my clients is the gap between understanding the tool logically and using the tool properly. And that's where I become such a powerful asset to your project. Because when we work together in a coaching relationship, I can help you clarify and articulate your idea to make it work. Sometimes what's in your head and what's on the page just don't match up. So let's make sure you understand how to write a fabulous mini outline and start making some decisions about the direction of your script. So I'm going to use an example of a mini outline from, guess what? The Devil Wears Prada. That's right. So here is a bad mini outline for The Devil Wears Prada. A young woman wants to be a journalist. She accepts a job at a fashion magazine. She struggles to fit in and to get all her work done on time. And then she decides to quit. Wah. Right? So why is it bad? Well, it's boring, right? There's no emotional hook. We don't really understand what's driving the protagonist. We also have no idea what the obstacles are that are in the way of this deep desire of this goal that she's pursuing. So it's missing some really crucial elements of a mini outline. So now let's make it better. We're still going to use Devil Wears Prada as an example, and let's create a better example of a mini outline. When a low maintenance young woman lands a job at a high fashion magazine, she must find a way to meet the ever increasing demands of her high maintenance boss. It's already so much better, right? We've got high maintenance, low maintenance, we've got demands. It's already so much better. Her plucky determination helps her ascend the ladder, but as she slowly trades in her values, she wonders if her success is worth the price of her soul. Ah, so just saying it out loud, it's so much better, right? What's the title of this film? Devil Wears Prada. And when you make a deal with the devil, what do, right? You have to sell your soul. So in this mini outline, we are giving a lot of stuff away, and that is the point. Your mini outline is a tool to help you make decisions about the direction of your story before you start writing. So don't stress out to make it a log line that has to be perfect and market and sell your project. That's not what we're doing. What we're doing is, in the simplest terms, outlining the trajectory of your protagonist's journey, what they want, what's in the way, what's at stake, and an emotional hook. So now let's make up another mini outline. We're going to do this for Anatomy of a Fall. This is a film that won the Oscar for Best Screenplay. Now, it was written by a pair of writers, Justine Triet and Artur Arari. I hope I'm saying that right. I looked it up and practiced a couple of times. They're a pair of writers, and they're also like a romantic pair, from what I understand, which is a very interesting script to be writing with your life partner. If you haven't seen the film, you will understand what I mean when you see it. Now, upon receiving her Oscar, Justine Triet said, "This will help with my midlife crisis," which I felt that. Now, let me speak for a minute to writing partnerships. Writing partnerships can work, and my goal for you is to empower you with the confidence of your own writing process that works for you. And then if you want to partner up with someone after that, great. But don't let your inexperience be the reason why you get a writing partner. I see this a lot with people who come to me to work as a client where they've been in a writing partnership that's kind of fallen apart. But the reason that they wanted the partnership in the first place was because they felt insecure about themselves as a writer. So they were relying on their writing partner to kind of guide the ship and tell them what to do, which isn't great for a writing partnership to begin with. You want to come to the table as equals, even if you have different strengths, but you should come to the table as equals. And if the person that you've partnered with doesn't know that much about screenwriting, you're not going to learn what you need to be an empowered solo screenwriter. That's what I'm here for, because you can learn your own process. You can do this. And once you have a process, you can write anything you want in your own voice, in your own vision, and you never have to rely on your writing partner to agree with your take, to be available, to make this project a priority. You get to be in charge of your own project. So that's my 2 cents on writing partnerships. They can work, and my goal is to empower you to be able to be your own standalone empowered writer. So you don't feel like you need a writing partnership because you don't know enough. You do. All right, so let's have our bad mini outline for Anatomy of a Fall. After her husband dies, a woman must figure out what to do. She lives in the French Alps with her son, and it is cold. Life is hard. Now, if you've seen the film, all of that is technically true. All of those things do occur within the film. But it's missing an emotional hook. It's missing any urgency. It's kind of leaving out some major things about what's driving this film forward. And you may think, oh, Emily, you're exaggerating. Haha, that mini outline is so bad. I've worked with hundreds of people at this point, and sometimes this is how the mini outline starts. It's okay if it's bad. You're actually much better off getting something bad onto the page and then we can fix it together than trying to make it perfect in your mind before you'll ever write it down. The key to the mini outline is all of the prep work that you've done in the episodes leading up to this one. Those are going to help you make decisions about the world of your story, the journey of your protagonist, and really getting some strong obstacles in their way. If you haven't made decisions about those things, you'll flounder with your mini outline. That's what it's for, is to help you get clarity and specificity. Okay, so let's make our Anatomy of a Fall mini outline better. We can do better. After her husband falls to his death from an open window, already it's better, right? Whoa, what? After her husband falls to his death from an open window, a woman finds herself on trial for her life. This is important detail that was missing. As the trial uncovers ugly truths about her marriage, the question of what really happened becomes even more unclear. Was the fall an accident, a suicide, or something else? Better, right? Now we're intrigued. We have a better idea of what this movie is about. We've got stakes. We've got someone on trial for her life. And this sort of murky question of what really happened. If you've seen this film, well, I don't want to give it away. Okay, that's all I'm going to say on Anatomy of a Fall. If you've seen the film or if you haven't seen the film, you can still see the difference between the bad mini outline and the good one. So now it's your turn. Have fun creating your mini outline and don't overthink it. The best thing that you can do is get it down on the page. Then you can make it better. And you might even have fun with it by seeing how badly you can write it and go from there. Sometimes when I'm really putting pressure on myself and I feel paralyzed, that's what I do. I say, how badly can I write this right now? And that unlocks something for me so I can get something on the page. So remember, for your mini outline, you want to introduce your protagonist, what they want, what's in the way, what's at stake, and some kind of emotional hook. And use the character, the four character elements that you developed in episode 3 and episode 6 to help you with that as well. All of these pieces go together, and now you're getting to a very solid foundation for your script, which the writing of is coming very soon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. If you enjoyed the show, remember to subscribe, and even better, leave a 5-star review. Ready to finally write and produce your damn script already? Go to writeyourshort.com to get started and connect with me on Instagram at @theonlyemilygrace. Your story matters, and who better to tell it than you? Stay tuned for the next episode, and I'll see you there.